What are you doing out there, ladies and gentlemen? What's working for you? Well, at least seems to be working. It seems at least you've noticed some improvement in working with your students, your young students who are really techno children, really raised up in the technological society, and they are accustomed to moving. Well, as it turns out, the U.S. is a global leader in education technology, with edtech companies raising almost $1.5 billion in 2018 alone. But firms like Flipgrid and Lexia will increasingly face competition from abroad. The edtech industry in East Asia is booming, especially as U.S. platforms like Newton expand overseas, tapping into growing global interest and adapting classrooms to digital native students. Digital native, those students who are all about technology. Still, while some educators are embracing technology in the classroom, multiple studies have shown more traditional classrooms can be more successful. Does that throw a wrench into things? More traditional classrooms can be more successful. A 2015 study by the London School of Economics showed GCSE test scores improved when schools in Birmingham, London, Leicester, Manchester banned phones from class. I know some of you saying, oh, no, that's just too much. When they banned phones from class, test scores improved. Neuroscience professor William Clem, who's author of The Learning Skills Cycle, points to a 2014 study that found taking notes in longhand helps students retain information better than using a laptop. How many of you recall I was asking a question earlier in this discussion? Do you think that we'll get to a point where the more people dislike using physical books, the more they'll also dislike writing? And that's not a cool thing. Again, taking notes in longhand helps students retain the information better than using a laptop. Clem also points out the dangers of chopping up lessons into small chunks, suggesting that switching between small lessons too quickly could rob students of valuable comprehension. He says students need time to engage with a topic once the teacher introduces it before moving on. And I know a lot of students and teachers can say amen to that. Even many tech-forward educators find value in traditional methods and suggest a blended learning approach. Katie Davis, associate professor, the University of Washington's Information School, says that she's seen a lot of discussion among academics in recent years about whether the lecture format is a relic and should go the way of the dinosaurs. She thinks that it really comes down to whether you believe there are valuable skills involved in following a complex argument that is presented linearly, straight ahead, in real time. While Professor Davis admits new media could provide valuable skills, she still believes lectures have their place. Educators across the tech spectrum agree that teachers' authority remains sacrosanct. Elizabeth Hoover, Chief Technology Officer of Public Schools in Alexandria City, Virginia, works to enhance education in her district through technology, but she says she would never replace direct instruction from teachers. Why is that the case? Well, the face-to-face interaction with the teacher is still the most important component in the classroom. She favors technology use only when it enhances a lesson in ways that are impossible offline. Shad also points out that many teachers rely on technology only because they don't have sufficient resources offline. Now listen to what she says. Programs like Lexia wouldn't even be necessary if schools provided more funding for aides, who could free up teachers to concentrate on the students who are struggling. Now, that brings us back to politics, the politics of education. As it turns out, we have a lot of politicians all across the nation who are devoted, who are dedicated, who are committed to ensuring that many, many schools are inadequately funded. Yes, you heard me right. They are dedicated to ensuring that many schools are inadequately funded. They know how funding processes work. They know how tax distribution into the school system works. And they know that, generally speaking, when there's not enough money to go around, they know this from experience. They know this from what they've heard their constituents say. They know this from reports that they've read for years and years, for decades and decades. When there's a shortage of funds on the state level, one of the things that the politicians who dry up the coffers, those who like to say, hey, look, let's reduce our income. When they say no more taxes, when they say let's reduce the taxes, as I've shared with you before, the way the government gets their money to spend is through taxes. So when you have state leaders who are saying let's cut our taxes, they're saying let's cut our revenues, which means let's cut our income. When they are saying let's cut our taxes, they know they're saying let's cut our income. Because to cut the taxes is to cut the income, period. They'll cut taxes when times are very, very lean. They'll cut taxes when times are very, very prosperous. Just steadily cutting. And then when things get really, really tight, they say, well, hey, look, you know what? We don't have that much income. We're going to have to cut some spending. And one of the areas where the folks who like to cut the taxes, the people who like to cut the income, like to cut spending, is in the area of education. Because they know that inner city schools and other public schools, particularly those that serve inner city residents, are going to hurt the worst. They know that schools, upper middle class, and in the wealthier white communities are going to feel it. But they also know that those schools that primarily serve the poor, low income, and black students are going to feel it much worse. And they know that cuts are going to be made. They know the goal is to hurt. And not just for the time being, but they want ripple effects to be felt years down the road as people find it more and more difficult to be well prepared for college, etc. And Shad says, many teachers rely on technology only because they don't have sufficient resources offline. Programs like Lexia wouldn't even be necessary if schools provided more funding for AIDS. And the schools would provide more funding for AIDS if the state provided more funding to the schools. And they can do it. Believe me when I say our legislators are smart enough to know how to fund school systems, all school systems, and fund them well. Oh, they know how to do it. They're intelligent enough to know how to do that. It's not that they don't know how to do it. It is lack of desire. Adequate funding so we have more aides in the schools so that there could be more concentration given to students who are struggling. And that would be a win all the way around. Back in a few.